lieutenant in a Canadian regiment in Flanders, one of many Americans to precede the government itself into that gigantic struggle. I had not entered the army of my own initiative, but rather as a natural result of the enlistment of the man whose indispensable assistant I was, the celebrated Boston surgical specialist, Dr. Herbert West. Dr. West had been avid for a chance to serve as surgeon in a great war, and then the chance had come. He carried me with him almost against my will. There were reasons why I could have been glad to let the war separate us, reasons why I found the practice of medicine and the companionship of West more and more irritating, but when he had gone to Ottawa and through a colleague's influence secured a medical commission as major, I could not resist the imperious persuasion of one determined that I should accompany him in my usual capacity. When I say that Dr. West was avid to serve in battle, I do not imply that he was either naturally warlike or anxious for the safety of civilization, always an ice-cold intellectual machine, sight blonde, blue-eyed, and spectacled. I think he secretly sneered at my occasional martial enthusiasms and censures of supine neutrality. There was, however, something he wanted in embattled Flanders, and in order to secure it, it had had to assume a military exterior. What he wanted was not a thing which many persons want, but something connected with the peculiar branch of medical science which he had chosen quite clandestinely to follow, and in which he had achieved amazing and occasionally hideous results. It was, in fact, nothing more or less than an abundant supply of freshly killed men in every stage of dismemberment. Herbert West needed fresh bodies because his life work was the reanimation of the dead. This work was not known to the fashionable clientele who had swiftly built up his fame after his arrival in Boston, but was only too well known to me, who had been his closest friend and sole assistant since the old days in Miskatonic University Medical School in Arkham. It was in those college days that he had begun his terrible experiments, first on small animals, and then human bodies shockingly obtained. There was a situation in which he injected into the veins of small things, and if they were fresh enough, they responded in strange ways. He had much trouble in discovering the proper formula, for each type of organism was found to need a stimulus especially adapted to it. Terror stalked him when he reflected on his partial failures. Nameless things resulting in perfect solutions or from bodies insufficiently fresh. A certain number of these failures remained alive. One was in an asylum, while others had vanished. And as he thought of conceivable yet virtually impossible eventualities, he often shivered breath beneath his usual stolidity. And we are going to start our music show with Science Fiction Double Feature from the Rocky Horror Picture soundtrack.
Michael Rennie was ill the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a celluloid jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. And this is how the message ran. Science fiction.
Right.
G. Carroll was over a barrel when Tarantula took to the hills. And I really got hot when I saw Jeanette Scott fight a triffid that spits poison and kills. Dana Andrews said prunes, gave him the runes, and passing them used lots of skills. But when worlds collide, said George Powell to his bride, I'm gonna give you some terrible thrills. Like a
we'll be right back. just like whoever. So quit complaining, brother. No one lives forever. Let's have a party. There's a full moon in the sky. It's the hour of the wolf, and I don't want to die. No one thinks that it's getting for very long, but just the same, who cares? There's nothing better safe to hide. Nowhere to run, no time to cry. So celebrate. Why are you still playing? Because any second it may end when it's all been said and done. Better that you would have some fun instead of hiding in a shell. Why make your life a living hell?
Thank you. midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no immortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Well, hello, you little boy. Don't be shy. Step right up on the reasonable guy. Don't be frightened by the look in my eyes. Just your average evil meteor from out of the sky. Well, I'm just shy and scared in this place. I'm just a fish out of water from outer space. You can see that the trip has left me tired and drained. So why don't you be a pal and bring me some brains? On his face, you'd be doing him a favor if you brought him to me. He ain't using his brain, he's just watching TV. Go down to Mr. McGee's. He hasn't had a thought since 43. His brain is the portrait of atrophy. He ain't using it, why not give it to me? Brains, brains, I won't lie. I'll eat the brains till the zombified. Sure, they might think it's deranged, but they won't give it a thought after I've eaten their brain. Brain, brain, it's okay. It's not a matter if it isn't gray. And if at first they think it's strange, they won't think twice if they don't have a brain. My fortune cookie says that I just can't stop. I sucked the noodle right out of the heads, and half an hour later I'm hungry again. Creep into the donut stop, sneak and tiptoe past the cop. Pick me up a crawler and a couple of tea, and any other sweetbreads you happen to see. Brains, brains, I won't lie. I'll eat the brains till the zombified. Sure, they might think it's deranged, but they won't give it a thought after I've eaten their brain. Brains, brains, it's okay. It's not a matter if it isn't gray. And if at first they think it's strange, they won't think twice if they don't have a brain. When I need them, big ones, fat ones, short ones, tall ones. They're so delectable, especially the small ones. No time to cook them in
when I got it in bed. I don't cry, I'm the heat'll only shrinkle. I just grab myself a straw and I drink a load. Town, but with all these brains, I can't help but think that there isn't one left out there to drink. Now fess up, boy, come on, heck, is there someone that you're trying to protect? Bring her down here to meet her and Dan. I'll promise I'll be your bestest friend. Brains, brains, I won't lie, I'll eat her brain till she's number five. Sure, she might think it's deranged, but she will give it a thought after I've eaten her brain. Brains, brains, it's okay. It's not a matter of it isn't gray. And if at first she thinks it's strange, she won't think twice if she don't have a brain. Brains, bring me her brain. Bring me her brain.
That was Brains by Voltaire. We started off with Science Fiction Double Feature from the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack, followed by No One Lives Forever, it's by Oingo Boingo, and then Thriller by Michael Jackson. You're listening to KR Astoria Youth Radio, Halloween edition on KMUN Astoria 91.9. I am reading from Herbert West Reanimator. Tune in. West had soon learned that absolute freshness was the prime requisite for useful specimens, and had accordingly resorted to frightful and unnatural expedients in body snatching. In college and during our early practice together in the factory town of Bolton, my attitude toward him had been largely one of fascinated admiration, but as his boldness and methods grew, I began to develop a gnawing fear. I did not like the way he looked at healthy living bodies, and then there came a nightmarish session in the cellar laboratory when I learned that a certain specimen had been a living body when he secured it. That was the first time he had ever been able to revive the quality of rational thought in the corpse, and his success, obtained at such a loathsome cost, had completely hardened him. Of his methods in the intervening 5 years, I dare not speak. I was held to him by sheer force of fear, and witnessed sights that no human tongue could repeat. Gradually, I came to find Herbert West himself more horrible than anything he did. That was when it dawned at me that his once normal scientific zeal for prolonging life had subtly degenerated into a mere morbid and ghoulish curiosity and secret sense of charnel picturesqueness. His interest became a hellish and perverse addiction to the repellently and fiendishly abnormal. He gloated calmly over artificial monstrosities which would make the most healthy men drop dead from fright and disgust. He became, behind his pallid intellectuality, a fastidious bottler of physical experiment. Dangers he met unflinchingly, crimes he committed unmoved. I think the climax came when he proved his point that rational life can be restored, and sought new worlds to conquer by experimenting on the reanimation of detached parts of bodies. He had wild and original ideas on the independent vital properties of organic cells and nerve tissue separated from natural physiological systems, and achieved some hideous preliminary results in the form of never-dying, artificially nourished tissue obtained from nearly hatched eggs of indescribably tropical reptiles. Two biological points he was exceedingly anxious to settle. First, whether any amount of consciousness and rational action be possible without the brain proceeding from the spinal cord and various nerve centers. And second, whether any kind of ethereal intangible relation distinct from material cells may exist to link the surgically separated parts of what had previously been a single living organism. All this research work required a prodigious supply of freshly slaughtered human flesh. and that was why Herbert West had entered the Great War.
Astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Yeah! just a jump to the left.
And a stretch to the right.
With your hands on your hips.
You're bringing me to your side. Where is the velvet crust? The pretty girls are insane. Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
It's a dream. Fantasy free me, so you can't see me. No, not at all. In another dimension, with voyeuristic intention. Well secluded, I see all.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip.
And nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation.
Like you're under sedation.
That was Mr. Crowley by Ozzy Osbourne. We started off this segment with Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr., then followed it up with Time Warp by the Rocky Horror Picture Show cast, and then Dragula by Rob Zombie. I am reading from Herbert West, Reanimator. You're listening to K-Air Astoria Youth Radio Halloween Edition. The phantasmal, unmentionable thing occurred one midnight late in March 1915 in a field hospital behind the lines of St. Eloy. I wonder, even now, if it could have been other than a demonic dream of delirium. West had a private laboratory in an east room of the barn-like temporary edifice, assigned him on his plea that he was devising new and radical methods for the treatment of hetero helpless cases of maiming there. He worked like a butcher in the midst of the gory wares, and I could never get used to the levity of which he handled and classified certain things. At times, he actually did perform marvels of surgery for the soldiers, but his chief delights were of a less public and philanthropic kind, requiring many explanations of sounds which seemed peculiar even amidst the babel of the damned. Among these sounds were frequent revolver shots, certainly not uncommon on a battlefield, but distinctly uncommon in a hospital. Dr. West's reanimated specimens were not meant for a long existence or a large audience. Besides human tissue, West employed much of the reptile embryo tissue which he had cultivated with such singular results. It was better than human material for maintaining life in organless fragments, and that was now my friend's chief activity. In a dark corner of a laboratory over a queer incubating burner, he kept a large vat full of the reptilian cell matter, which multiplied and grew puffily and hideously. On the night of which I speak, we had a splendid new specimen, a man at once physically powerful and of such high mentality that a sensitive nervous system was assured. It was rather ironic, for he was the officer who helped West to his commission, and was now to have been our associate. Moreover, he had been in the past secretly studied the theory of reanimation to some extent under West. Major Sir Eric Morland Clapham Lee, DSO, was the greatest surgeon in our division and had been hastily assigned to St. Eloy sector. When news of the heavy fighting reached headquarters, he had come in an aeroplane piloted by the intrepid Lieutenant Ronald Hill, only to be shot down when directly over his destination. The fall had been spectacular and awful. Hill was unrecognizable afterward, but the wreck yielded up the great surgeon in a nearly decapitated but otherwise intact condition. West had greedily seized the lifeless thing that had once been his friend and fellow scholar, and I shuddered when he finished severing the head, placed it in a hellish vat of the pulpy reptile tissue to preserve it for future experiments, and proceeded to treat the decapitated body on the operating table. He injected new blood, joined certain veins, arteries, and nerves at the headless neck, and closed the ghastly aperture with engrafted skin from an unidentified specimen which had borne an officer's uniform. I knew what he wanted, to see if this highly organized body could exhibit without its head any signs of mental life which had extinguished Sir Eric Morland Clapham Lee, once a student of reanimation. This silent trunk was now gruesomely called upon to exemplify it.
Saw the cat at my door.
That was Lust for a Vampire by iMonster. Behind that was Devil Woman by Cliff Richard. I am going to be finishing off Herbert West Reanimator by H.P. Lovecraft on K-Air Astoria Youth Radio Halloween Edition. I can still see Herbert West under the sinister electric light as he injected the remaining solution into the arm of the headless body. The scene I cannot describe. I should faint if I tried it, for there is madness in a room full of classified Chanel things, with blood and lesser human debris almost ankle deep on the slimy floor, and with hideous reptilian abnormalities sprouting, bubbling, and baking over a winking, bluish-green specter of dim flame in a far corner of the black shadows. The specimen, as West repeatedly observed, had a splendid nervous system. Much was expected of it, and as a few twitching motions began to appear, I could see the feverish interest on West's face. He was ready, I think, to see proof of his increasingly strong opinion that consciousness, reason, and personality can exist independently of the brain. That man has no central connective spirit, but is merely a machine of nervous matter, each section more or less complete in itself. In one triumphant demonstration, West was able to relegate the mystery of life to the category of myth. The body now twitched more vigorously, and beneath our avid eyes commenced to heave in a frightful way. The arms stirred disquietly, the legs drew up, and various muscles contracted in a repulsive kind of writhing. Then the headless thing threw out its arms in a gesture which was unmistakably one of desperation, an intelligent desperation apparently sufficient to prove every theory of Herbert West. Certainly, the nerves were recalling a man's last act of life. The struggle to get free of the falling aeroplane. What followed, I shall never positively know. It may have been wholly a hallucination from the shock caused at that instant by the sudden and complete destruction of the building in the cataclysm of German shellfire. Who can gainsay it, since West and I were the only proved survivors? West liked to think that before his recent disappearance, but there were times when he could not, for it was queer that we both had the same hallucination. The hideous occurrence itself was very simple, notable only for what it implied. The body on the table had risen with a blind and terrible groping, and we heard a sound. I should not call it that sound of voice, for it was too awful, and yet its timbre was not the most awful thing about it, neither was its message. It had merely screamed, "Jump, Ronald, for God's sake, jump!" The awful thing was its source, for it had come from the large covered vat in the ghoulish corner of crawling black shadows.
Science fiction. Double feature. Frank has built and lost his creature. Dark.